But again, welcome this morning. So we appreciate everybody being here. We're gonna start off this morning with Jeff Nissen. As you said, business development manager at Bell Helicopter Textron. And so he's going to give us a brief overview of the V-280, the V-247 tiltrotor programs, including an overview of Bell innovative aircraft, an overview of JMR customer needs, V-280 performance objectives, JMR TD schedule and status, V-247 performance objectives, and current MUX program and schedule. In his current role, Jeff is responsible for the capture and development of technology and innovation business opportunities. He coordinates the internal rotorcraft technology research and development efforts with external customer needs. His career is focused on a range of materials engineering and manufacturing technology, research and development projects, and he served as a technical manager of several IRAD and CRAD projects sponsored by the FAA, Office of Naval Research, and the National Rotorcraft Technology Center Vertical Lift Consortium. These projects covered a wide range of helicopter technologies, including nanomaterial development, erosion protection, crashworthiness, development and handling of quality requirements for future tiltrotor aircraft, and development of analysis capabilities for ice protection systems, aeroelastic stability, and improved rotor loads development. Please welcome me to joining them. Welcoming Jeff.
That was way too hard to
I got to read it all, so whatever I've been giving me.
So I was looking through yesterday, and I got way too many slides, but I'll go through them pretty quick. And I've got just kind of an overview. A lot of this is canned, but if you have any questions, you can stop me at any time, and we can poke a little further. This is really centric around tiltrotor aircraft. I'll move to the other side. And so the whole idea of this presentation is the next generation of rotorcraft technology. As you know, we've been into tilt rotors for a long time. We feel like it's coming to age, and now we're really exploiting that advantage to see what we can provide in terms of capability for that next generation, whether it's a warfighter or a humanitarian type of solution. So taking it back to where Bell or how Bell was built, more than 50 years ago, building trucks, building vertical lift trucks for the Army, by the thousands, the workhorse of a lot of the conflicts that we've had have been moving, people around the battlefield. And so you got an aircraft that you load a bunch of people in and you go about 110 knots. Fast forward to 50 years later, we're still doing big trucks moving people around about the same speed. So 50 years we've gone about 45 miles an hour faster with the rotorcraft technology. Taking you back how we operated them, take them in large numbers, pile people in, go short distances, drop people off, and so. You basically have the same capability and same tactic here. You employ a lot of rotorcraft. You go very short distances and you move a bunch of people. So, Bell, legacy of Bell, that you may or may not know, is around some of these innovative products. So you have the first aircraft to break the sound barrier. One of the ones, that I'm particularly fond of, the X-22, that was, a radical departure for a lot of aircraft that we developed at the time, up to the Bell 533 in 1969 went 300 miles an hour in a helicopter by basically putting as much jet engine as we could get on the side of that aircraft. So really, this was about a six-year development to go from an aircraft that went 110 knots, that Huey, to something that went over 300 miles an hour. So a lot of talent within Bell that developed that capability. Then we started playing with the tiltrotor technology in the 60s time frame to see what we could do, and then just started building that capability and expertise. And so went from the XB-3, the XB-15, and then we did a UAV. This is back in 1995. It was Eagle Eye, and then on up to the 609, V-22, and beyond. So what we're basically pitch in here for if I can put on my BD hat for a second is the strategic capability and the global reach. So you have a capability that can go much further, much faster, and be more cost effective and operationally relevant. And so where you may have to do a strategic lift and bring all your aircraft over and supplies and equipment, you have a new capability that can leave out of Florida or leave out of New Mexico and end up in Africa or Southwest Asia all on its own just with aerial refueling. And so it changes the mindset of a lot of how you might want to operate the aircraft, and you no longer need to bring all the baggage with it to basically drag it across the ocean. You can now just send it over the ocean. So where are we with V-22? We've got over 350 in the fleet, and they're over 350,000 hours. It's currently got the safest record right now for a rotorcraft in the fleet, and it's most survivable. So we've got a couple cases of being in combat, taking fire, and getting the troops home. So where are we going? This is the V-280 Valor. This is the next generation of the tilt rotor aircraft. It's basically taking the history that we've learned and applying it to what can we do if we were to design it in, say, 2013. What could we pile into that aircraft, and what could we get for capability? And so to give you just kind of the straighten in your mind, because it gets very confusing, at least at Bell, what is V-280 and what is the JMR? So on the left side here, you have the Joint Multi-Role Technology Demonstrator, and all of that is a science and technology effort funded by the Army to see what's possible from a technology for their warfighters. So you have a demonstrator aircraft, which is what we're building, and the idea is show off what we have to a TRL of 6, or technology readiness of 6, which means it's ready to be moved into production as a production product. And then we have what the production aircraft or production representative capability would be in the model performance spec. Then on the other side of that, you have on the DoD program of record, what is the mission that they want to do, whether it's attack and utility. So in the end, what you want is to merge all this into the program of record needs. And so build, fly a demonstrator that gets us as close as we need to be prior to going to production, build the production capability that satisfies the program record. So hopefully I didn't make that any muddier than it is. But so there's a lot of capabilities the Army is going after, and we'll go after a lot of that. And some of those capabilities are listed here. I won't go through all of them, but it's all around. They are recognizing speed and range, and it needs to be affordable. It can't be a $100 million aircraft, and it can't cost $20,000 a flight hour to fly. It's got to be something that they can employ in large numbers and move quickly, more expeditionary like they want to do. So, like I said, it's faster. It's got a lot of range. So one of the things that shows off some of the range capabilities is these circle charts, and showing you the range ring. So a conventional aircraft shown in green, and then the reach of a tilt rotor. This is really not too particular with V-280. This could also be a V-22 circle. It'd be pretty similar. So where you might have to have two operating bases for a legacy helicopter, you can serve the whole region with one aircraft. And then if you were in the Pacific and you wanted to move around the island chain that's over there, there's some of the reach that you have with the long range or long legs of a tilt rotor. And so the program schedule, I mentioned we started V-280 design in 2013. The plan is to fly this in the fall of this year. So to go from napkin basically designed to flying an aircraft in 4 years. And then we'll have a flight test program over the next year and a half, and basically demonstrate what we think it can do all the way up to how to maintain it and how do you prove that this is a better aircraft than anything else that's out there. So we picture here shows the fuselage and wing mating that we did back in April. We just came out of ground vibration test where we load basically everything in the aircraft and shake it and figure out what the vibration modes are. Can it fly stability wise? Is it designed correctly for handling vibration? And that's what the aircraft looks. That was just before loading it into ground vibration test. So we have to load basically the entire weight of the aircraft. In this case, we simulate the rotor weight until we get the rotors on. We can do that just with weights. And then after we come out of that, we'll start building, complete the rest of the rotor install. So we're close, but the last 5% is going to take us a lot longer than the previous 20%. So one of the ways that we can go from 4 years from concept to flying aircraft is this digital thread, and it's quite a buzzword in our industry. But what it really boils down to is we're designing in the latest CAD packages. So we're not using any paper drawings on this aircraft. We really made a big investment on our 525 aircraft to go all digital, which means no shop floor planning, the paperwork. It's all digital, all the way up to the assembly instructions are on a Microsoft Surface, and they can explode the parts and assemble them, and basically it gives you the futuristic YouTube-like assembly instructions that you would hope to get in building aircraft today. I think there's a video that we've got. It's a couple minutes. But.
Yeah, I'll shoot it up there.
Okay.
Development, what was important to us was managing technical maturity with an aggressive build schedule. And so, one of the key elements to that is visual planning. And I say that because we're all visual learners, whether we choose to admit it or not, that's how we learn.
Here on B280, we're creating what are essentially 3D drawings. So on 525, we used them for planning. Here we're using it for engineering. We're creating an engineering data set that can be repurposed downstream. So that same file that engineering releases goes to planning, and they're able to take that data, that 3D content, all the metadata that comes with that 3D content, so the part numbers, the nomenclature, what system that part belongs to, all that data can be exposed by the planner to basically step out the installation visually and kind of storyboard using 3D content the way that we're going to build this aircraft.
This composer approach has taken us in a different direction in the sense that it's given us the opportunity to truly leverage the engineering that is in KTV6 directly, not just as we assemble the aircraft, but think downstream users in the fleet being able to leverage that same engineering as they may do routine maintenance on the aircraft. So I think that is a sort of an enterprise level solution and beyond for the customers as we continue to mature this idea.
The exciting part was being able to have that 3D real time. It's an image of what your finished product needs to look like right in your hands as you're doing the build. It's helpful from the planning phase, the product definition phase, all the way through the build phase, and even into inspection. The inspector can get a look at what it's supposed to look like right in his hands, and then look at the ship. Okay, yes, everything matches.
So when you look at Surface Pro, you see the 3D content, you see multiple view planes, and basically those are different stories or different sequences of the assembly. So what Composer allows us to do is again, it's a 3D publishing tool that allows us to cut and paste 3D content as if it were text.
I mean, you really have the whole aircraft in your hand. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how many times I could look at a clamp stack up on a blueprint from Bedview. The stack ups are hidden. You can't move them, to see what's behind if you've got a big stack up. And with Surface Pro, I can look at anything I want, any angle I want, and it's just amazing.
I was excited to use it. Being a production specialist, I've been trying to get my hands on CATIA access for a long time. CATIA is true. Everything on the model is based off CATIA. Everything is built for CATIA. The composer file itself is built to CATIA, so whenever we come up to work, we know it's right. There's no guesswork in it. You point and click, you find what you're working on, and you go perform your task.
The old ways we used to do it at Bell, looking at that, it'd be paper, and the new way we're doing it, composer, computer, color, is a whole new era for Bell. This is the right way to go. When we show it off to people in the Department of Defense, people who we're trying to sell it to are blown away by Composer because now they're seeing that their mechanics can actually work on this instead of calling Bell and asking their engineers, what exactly are we looking at? How are my guys going to work on this?
We're able to build structure. We can section through this stuff. We can make things blink. We can highlight using colors. I mean, that visual that the assembler gets is just amazing. So it's kind of another element of the engineering piece of it, you know, to kind of communicate that properly. And when you're doing black and white on 2D paper space, you're limited with what you can communicate, right?
But part of it, to me, that has been the most rewarding is just seeing how the team has come together and the excitement that we have about the future of this program and the future of FBF, because that's what this is all about. We're not building one aircraft. This is the first aircraft of several thousand.
So one of the things that I guess all that marketing mumbo jumbo manifests itself is when you create a design and you send it to a supplier, they're using the real data, and so they're not working to a drawing that they made off your drawing. It's actual native data. So when Spirit made the fuselage and we bring it in and we bring our wing that we made on top of it, you don't have a lot of trouble. And these guys were really fascinated by how much easier it was to just drop it in because everybody was working to the same data. So it really...
That's awesome.
So far, it's had a big impact on aircraft number one, which... usually the most difficult one and the most shimming and the most rework. It's actually going together better than a normal V-22 would, which is pretty impressive. So one of the innovations that we have in this aircraft as well as some of our previous aircraft is fly-by-wire. So any aircraft OEM's got a system integration lab. We do the same thing. We've got our full authority fly-by-wire system in it, which means they're basically flying the aircraft in a room. It's got the same actuators. It's got the same flight control laws in the computer. It's got all the hardware except the real aircraft. The idea is if you put a pilot in this room, he wouldn't be able to tell, he or she wouldn't be able to tell if they're actually in the aircraft or not. Because it's got the same feedback, it's pushing the same actuators, it should respond just like the aircraft would. And so you do a lot of learning in this environment, and so they tweak the control laws and how the aircraft handles within this environment, and it really saves a lot of time to get to that first flight. One of the other whiz bang things in this future vertical lift application we're looking at, if you have a chance to see the V-280 mock-up at one of the shows, it's got this really cool display as our idea of what the display of the future could look like. It's basically a continuous flat panel display that you can drag and move different features. You can create panels and move them around while being completely tailorable to what you want to see and what you don't want to see. And the same similar thing in the back of the aircraft, having basically a battle board that says here's everything the people in the back would want to see, and so you could reconfigure that. But having the ability to reconfigure the displays is going to be a pretty big innovation if we can get it built. So that's one of the systems that's usually a supplied part that we'll have to work with a vendor to create. So affordability on the V-280, this gives you an example of what we've done. So this is the tooling for making a V-22 wing, and it's got a forward sweep and a dihedral in it. And so after going through the pain of manufacturing a V-22 wing. We started doing a little different on the V-280. So if you make the wing straight and you make it with a broad goods, which is just rolls of material instead of tape, individual tape, you can make a wing that's half the cost of a legacy wing. And the same story with the yoke and rotor parts. So this is a yoke. So you got three blades coming off of here. This is about 4.5 to 5 inches thick. A lot of material. So legacy way would be to get a tape weighing machine and lay that material or wind that material around a mandrel. If you can bring it off in rolls, you can do a lot of pounds per hour is what you're going for on a composite build. So these so far have been very, very productive for us to build them quickly. And then same translates into blades. So taking the same approach, you know, how much material can we lay down and cure in a small amount of time? And broad goods have been a lot of the area that we've been focused on, and how do you get all that material in the structure of the blade. And you can get lower cost and lighter product from it. And so to go back kind of the overall theme, the tilt rotor aircraft, and especially 280 with applying all the lessons learned from previous generation aircraft, has got more capability, more potential overmatch than anything we've ever built, and we feel like it's the right way to go for the future of vertical lift. So I'll jump gears just a little bit. So this is another product we're working on. We are about where we were in 2013 with 280, so very early in the design. We've made some marketing material. We've got some requirements laid out, and some design work going on. This is a capability for the Marines to basically have a predator-like aircraft on a boat. So vertical takeoff, very high speed cruise, and very long legs. So fit in a hangar, which is a very difficult task. You can see how folded up we've got to fold it to get in a boat hangar. But you got to fold wings, rotate stuff, and really compact it. See some of the technical specs that we're targeting. This is going to be a big aircraft. It's going to have a lot of capability. So it's got payloads of tens of thousands of pounds. Most of it's fuel. You either trade fuel or other payloads. You know, you can either load it all with fuel and go as far as you want, or you can load it with fuel and other things and kind of trade off how many hours on the station do you want. So the idea is give the Marines the capability where they can have two that operate around the clock to provide reconnaissance and surveillance. And that's it.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it. That was great. Anybody have any questions? Well, I'm sure there's got to be some questions.
Jeff, what's the relationship of the 5.5 to the V-280 again?
The fly-by-wire is the biggest thing we'll ever do there. As well as the manufacturing process, going to the all-digital, going from that to the V-280 is really a safe, low-risk effort. So we cut our teeth on 5.25. Got the ability to do everything digital, and then that made it a manufacturing process much easier to use. And then that aircraft will be the first civil fly-by-wire aircraft, so everything we're going around civil certification of fly-by-wire is going to be helping us bring future aircraft around this. V-22 already has fly-by-wire, so on the military side, we're pretty confident that we could get that with not too much risk.
Is there a military equivalent for the 5.5?
There's potential, and there's capabilities that are desirable in the aircraft. It's big, it's got high range and high speed, so you could load it up. It could be a naval variant. It could be humanitarian relief, UN type of adaptation. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there. It's big. You got to want big health company.
How do you see yourself with the future of vertical lift upcoming competition against like Lockheed? So you've got your kind of double prop versus the single prop. Is there advantages or disadvantages? I just think sort of biased.
Oh, absolutely. There's, technology-wise, there's a lot in the tilt rotor. It's not something new that we're playing around with. It's something we're serious about. So we've got what we think is the best answer for, a capability set 3, which is, a Black Hawk-sized aircraft. There's benefits and drawbacks to both designs. What we're focused on is getting the flight this fall, showing what it can do, and then let the competition lay out how it lays out. But we'll be ready to enter that competition.
So you've got the Army as your main customer now,
yep.
And then will you be transitioning to an international perspective with that? Or?
There's for a program at FDL size, there will be international interest and partnering opportunities. It'll be a joint development, so the Marines and the Army. Marines are already feeding requirements into the process. So, basically it'll be every service will have a say in what they want. Hopefully the result is Navy variant, Marine variant, and Army variant.
And then on the, the Vigilant, the U.S. Is that the main mission of that is ISR, or is it, so is that like a U-class type of variant, or is that where you're headed with that, or what's
I'd have to go back to the program manager, it's still early, so I think they're still figuring out what the requirements are going to be. Once the Marines really kick out that solid requirement, then we'll go after what it is. We're building the capability to start to take off and 24/7 time on station. So that's important.
Well, the vertical takeoff is very good. That way you don't have to have this vertical landing as well, so you don't have to worry about the tadpole launch.
And that's the main benefit. And there's there's tails that are configurations that you can do, but we're focused on that. That's the lower solution.
If you lose one of the tilt rotor engines while you're in orbital flight,
yep.
Is it still controllable?
Just like
other aircraft that have two engines.
So the only aircraft that wasn't survivable in a one engine operation was the XD-3 that had a single reciprocating engine driving both props. So all new tilt rotors have twin engine at the minimum and a cross shaft. So on B-22, you get 6,000 horsepower on one side that can drive both sides.
I say engine, so one rotor running and the other rotor, for whatever reason, the engine's fine, but if you shut it down because you have a blade out or you have shot off or something, it'll fly with one rotor.
No, absolutely.
In horizontal.
You might be able to do a crash landing on a wing, but
just the aerodynamic as opposed to like a commercial aircraft. Right. You lose an engine and you can still fly the aircraft.
It does have a glide ratio, but it's not an conventional airline glide ratio. Okay. Helicopter, you lose an engine.
The acquisition of Sikorsky by Lockheed, has that given Bell some space in the marketplace in terms of confidence where sometimes you hear that the Sikorsky approach and the Lockheed approach are not harmonious? So do you sense that there's some advantage for Bell right now in the market?
I don't get to do a lot of commenting on that. There's Sikorsky and Lockheed competitors. They are a teammate with us on the JMRTD, so they're doing the mission system. So we're really happy about the partnership we have. But whenever a acquisition happens in the industry like that, it always shakes everybody up. So we'll see how it plays out. We're going after business in different markets, and they are too. So we'll see.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
I didn't see you.